Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
And tickets and ticket offers, the online source for where to go and what to do. It's 11 o'clock.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. President Obama introduced the Warren Buffett rule this week, which, if enacted into law, will require all Americans to move to Omaha, wear off-the-rack suits from Men's Warehouse, and dispense folksy wisdom about investing. Well, not sure how this will save the economy, but we're willing to try anything. We'll ask about that rule, plus famed naturalist Jane Goodall joins us to play Not My Job. And Carl Castle really shares his thoughts as he looks out at our audience here.
Damn, so many cute girls.
We'll ask who's really enjoying the vista before him. It's coming right up in our news quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Saudi King Abdullah says women in his country will be allowed to vote for the first time ever in municipal elections scheduled 4 years from now. NPR's Soraya Sahadi Nelson reports the king's pledge falls short of what many Saudi women were asking for.
Many Saudi women and their supporters had urged King Abdullah to allow them to vote in municipal elections being held this coming Thursday. The government earlier had said that would happen, but then in recent months refused to allow women to register as candidates or voters. Officials explained that for women to take part, separate polling stations for men and women are needed to adhere to Saudi Arabia's strict Islamic code that calls for segregation of the sexes in public. On Sunday, the king, in a televised speech to his advisory council, said women will be able to run as candidates and cast ballots in the next municipal elections scheduled for 2015. He also pledged to appoint women to his advisory council. Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Dubai.
Two Americans who spent the past 2 years in an Iranian prison are back in the U.S. Their plane landed a short time ago at Kennedy Airport in New York. They were released last week after posting $1 million bail. In Iraq, at least 10 people are dead and scores wounded after a series of explosions in the Shiite holy city of Karbala today. NPR's Gus and Adnan reports.
Four bombs attached to two parking cars have been detonated close to a downtown passport office in Karbala province, 70 miles south of Baghdad. The explosions took place when people were trying to finish their passports applications. Karbala is a predominantly Shia province and one of the holiest places in Iraq. Analysts fear that the explosions may ignite a sectarian war, such as the events of 2006 and 2007, as U.S. troops prepare to withdraw at the end of this year. Ghassan Adnan, NPR News, Baghdad.
Former pizza executive Herman Cain won the Florida straw poll yesterday with 37% of the vote. Texas Governor Rick Perry was a distant second at 15%. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney was third at 14%. Romney finished first in the Michigan Republican straw poll. Michigan Public Radio's Laura Weber has more.
Romney won the Michigan straw poll with 51% of the vote. Perry finished with 17%. Herman Cain had a distant 8.5%. Romney's appearance was anxiously anticipated on Mackinac Island. He is the son of a former governor in Michigan, and he often recalls sentimental stories from his childhood when he returns to the state. Michigan Republican Party Chairman Bobby Shostak says Romney is the one to beat in the Great Lakes state.
Clearly, somebody with the name of Romney will appeal, I think, to independents as well as Republicans.
Shostak says he thinks Michigan could be turning back into a GOP state. Michigan has voted for the Democratic presidential candidate in the last five elections. For NPR News, I'm Laura Weber on Mackinac Island, Michigan.
And this is NPR News from Washington. Thousands of Palestinians turned out in the West Bank today to welcome home President Mahmoud Abbas after a speech to the United Nations last week. He told them a Palestinian spring has been born now that he's asked the United Nations to recognize Palestinian independence. The move has boosted Abbas's popularity, along with his refusal to resume peace talks with the Israelis. Spain's northeastern region of Catalonia is holding its last bullfight today in a nearly 100-year-old bullring in downtown Barcelona. Lauren Freyer reports a regional ban on the practice goes into effect in January.
It's a spectacle that inspired the likes of Hemingway and Picasso, but today marks the season's last bullfight in Catalonia. Catalan signed a petition to ban bullfighting last year. The running of the bulls, where the animals aren't killed in public, is still legal. Catalonia joins the Canary Islands as the only places in Spain where bullfighting is illegal. Across the country, the industry still employs some 200,000 people and nets more than $3.5 billion a year. Even though attendance is down nationwide, 18,000 spectators are filing into Barcelona's Grand Ring, which is sold out today. For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
Diana Nyad has given up her attempt to swim from Cuba to Florida. Her team says the 62-year-old swimmer decided she couldn't continue after being attacked by a man of war. She was told another sting could be life-threatening. Her team says she completed at least 49 miles of the 103-mile passage. She made the same attempt last month, but had to stop after suffering an asthma attack. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, providing resources to improve the quality of health care. Online at rwjf.org/consumer.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to be with you. Great to see you today. You know, politics have gotten pretty harsh, pretty juvenile, and a lot of people, maybe including us sometimes, have made the comparison between our leaders and chimpanzees. You know, all they do is scowl and shriek and fling poo at each other. But our guest today, Dr. Jane Goodall, says that's patently unfair to the chimpanzees. So she'll be on to explain that. But first, you can show us your dominance display. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you are on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Peterson Lambert from Seattle, Washington.
Peterson Lambert?
That's me.
That is an aristocratic-sounding name.
I should put my martini down.
Oh, very good. Of course, you're in a tuxedo, I imagine.
Of course.
Peterson, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a comedienne whose newest Comedy Central special is now available on iTunes. Ms. Jessie Klein is here.
Hello.
Next up, a Chicago-based comedian and the host of Vocalo.org, Mr. Brian Babylon.
Hey, Harry, how are you, man?
And finally, a comedian performing September 30th at the Crest Theater in Sacramento, California. It's Paula Poundstone. So, Peterson, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify at least two of them. Do that. You'll win the prize, Carl's Voice, for your voicemail, answering machine, chip in your head, whatever you want. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
Okay, here is your first quote.
Don't you think Thurston Howell III should be taxed at the same rate as Gilligan?
That was from ABC's Jake Tapper. He was tweeting about the new tax plan pushed by whom?
President Obama.
Yes, this week. Very good. This week, the president unveiled his new tax plan, and all anybody could talk about it was its so-called Buffett rule. This guarantees every American a cheeseburger in paradise and a margarita, and he promised to use SEAL Team 6 to finally hunt down the lost shaker of salt. Oh, wait. That's the Jimmy Buffett rule. No, he meant the billionaire Warren Buffett, and apparently this all has to do with marginal tax rates. According to President Obama, it is unfair that Warren Buffett's secretary pays a higher tax rate on her income than her billionaire boss does. So Democrats now have their working class hero, their Joe the Plumber. It's Debbie, the highly paid executive assistant who gets Berkshire Hathaway stock every Christmas. Help is on the way, Debbie.
My understanding is that there's not a lot of people as rich as Warren Buffett.
That would be true.
And that, therefore, the change is not necessarily substantive, but...
So you think that there's really, I mean, even if you were to tax people as rich as Warren Buffett higher, it wouldn't do us a lot of good.
Well, probably not. It might make me personally feel better, yes.
That's really what it's all about. You're sitting there dealing with your financial problems, and you're like, yeah, but at least Warren Buffett is getting screwed a little bit more. And that
not more, but commensurately on the same...
Yeah.
I don't want to get screwed more than Warren Buffett, and that's really the first time I've ever said that.
All right, Peterson, here is your next quote.
Damn, so many cute girls.
That was a Twitter user named Quickster, not to be confused with Quickster, the new spin-off company announced by what popular DVD service?
Netflix.
Yes, 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 yes. Every now and then. Every now and then a traumatic event happens to bring Americans together, and this week the nation all cried out as one... What do you mean we have to go to two separate websites to order DVDs or stream movies? Well, the way it'll work is you'll be able to watch decades-old TV series whenever you want from Netflix streaming, but if you want actual DVDs to leave in your coffee table for 3 months, you'll get them from a new company called, of all random words, Quickster.
And I'm curious, someone lost their job because whoever named this was working on the internet in 2003. You don't add a stir on anything like Napster, Friendster, Lamester. You don't do that.
Bankruptster,
yeah.
It was such a weird thing. It was like just a few months after Netflix lost about 1 million subscribers after a price hike, it's like they realized they still had some customers left and were like, how can we dump those freeloaders? And then, this is great, late Sunday night, Netflix CEO Reed Hastings apparently drunk emailed America. He said, quote, I screwed up. And then he went on in this weird jag about how much he loved Netflix and how much he appreciated you. And the next thing you know, he was outside your window holding up a boombox that was playing in your eyes. Yeah, here's the thing, and we started with this tweet. Well, what happened was, as you said, they sort of randomly and stupidly picked this name, Quickster, without checking to see that Quickster, spelled the way they're spelling it, is already the Twitter handle of this guy. His name is Jason Castillo. He's a young man, and we understand he likes girls and smoking dope.
Yeah.
And so now we'll present to you Carl Castle's Quickster Piece Theater, the selected tweets of Jason Castillo. The man they call Quickster. Carl?
Bored as bleep. Want to blaze, but at the same time, I don't. Dang, nothing to eat. I'm going to ask my dad for money so I can go buy something.
There you go. All right, here is your last quote.
If you spot something gigantic that is not the Goodyear blimp curling toward the parking lot, you need to let people know ASAP.
That was the Monroe County News out of Michigan warning its readers to watch out for the falling what?
Satellite.
Yes, the falling satellite. Very good. All week long, people upset about the changes at Netflix held out hope that a NASA satellite might plummet to the Earth and put them out of their misery.
But it's so much garbage. You know, I'm not a, you know, Captain James T. Kirk, but I heard...
Yes?
That there's a lot of garbage in the atmosphere. That,
there
you know,
is.
You know, a lot of trash up there. We need to get a big, you know, Hoover vac up there.
Big dust buster.
Yep.
You know, in fact, there is so much of that stuff up there that for their story on this, NPR talked to a, quote, orbital debris scientist at NASA.
And they have someone getting paid for that?
Yeah, he's on staff. But really, orbital debris scientist, isn't that like cosmic waste management? Are there shady guys hanging out at NASA not doing any actual work but drawing a paycheck?
Yeah. As long as that orbital debris scientist makes sure that nothing hits Ryan Gosling, I'm fine with him. Just make sure Ryan Gosling's
really?
Okay. Yeah, we need him.
So the satellite comes plunging to Earth toward Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, I'll get in the way.
And this, and good, you know what?
Yeah, I would do anything for that guy.
Carl, how did Peterson do in our quiz?
Peterson, you had a great game. 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
I want to remind everybody that they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. For tickets and more information on our shows, including our upcoming show in Indianapolis on October 27th, you can go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Jesse, it's not often we get excited about the arrival of a new bank in this country. The one that opened in Florida last week, though, is a cause for celebration. Finally, we have a safe and secure place to store our what?
Oh, no. Our nest eggs.
No.
Our pets.
No.
Our what? Give me a hint.
Well, you know what they say, a moment on the lips, a lifetime in the bank.
Fat?
Yes, it's a fat bank.
Oh, a fat bank. Oh,
a fat bank.
Oh, my
gosh. Oh, the fat bank opened.
Everybody dreams of having a flush bank account, unless, of course, you keep your savings at the Orlando Fat Bank. The so-called Liquid Gold Center opened Friday. Liquid Gold. It allows patients of liposuction to store their removed fat for later plastic surgeries if necessary. What's wrong? Do you hate capitalism? What's your problem?
I guess I just thought we already had a fat bank and it was called McDonald's.
Fat banks may encourage us to solve our financial crisis by switching to a currency based on something we've got in abundance. Go back to the fat standard.
Yeah. Europe has the euro. We have fat.
Yeah, we love it.
How much fat are those?
Like, so what, can you go to the fat bank and get change? Can I have 2 love handles for a butt, please?
So you come in and say, okay, I want to make a deposit to puff up my lips or get a little...
Well, the idea is...
What?
Well, the idea is, like, let's say you have liposuction, right?
Yeah.
They remove fat from your unsightly fatty areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, later on, depending on your needs, you might want to have a little fat injected into your lips.
Yeah.
Get that going, you know, and you'll need your own fat.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So you have to have someplace safe to keep that. You don't want to keep that under your mattress. Trust me on that.
Been there.
No, I was just wondering, can you donate fat to another? Because...
Like a fat gift card.
I suddenly become generous beyond my wildest dreams.
Coming up, it's been 5 minutes since our last workplace accident. It's a job safety Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And the great primatologist Jane Goodall joins us to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and eSurance, providing car insurance shopping tools like real-time comparison quotes and coverage counselors. Learn more at eSurance.com. The Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art, seeking to improve Americans' understandings of Muslim arts and cultures. And Reputation.com, with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, China is moving aggressively into renewable energy. Will it leave American plans for a green economy in the dust? Plus, from the New Girl and 2 Broke Girls to prime suspect in the Playboy Club, we'll look at the big lineup of women and their roles in TV's new season. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers.
You know, people develop strong attachments to their cars.
Yeah, and it's very hard to tell them. It's time to move on.
Something my brother's heard from every one of his wives.
Anyway, we have a way to ease the pain a bit. Now you can donate your car, and the net proceeds from its sale will benefit this station.
Interested? We thought so. Here's what to do.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, wpln.org.
Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from Bookman Bookwoman Bookstore, featuring bestsellers and gently used books located at 21st Avenue South in Hillsborough Village. Details at bookmanbookwoman.com. And by Vanderbilt Owen Graduate School of Management, hosting an open house October 1st, where working professionals can discover their executive programs. This event is open to the public, vanderbiltexecutive.com. The time is 11:20.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Jesse Klein. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is David Dunbar calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, how are things in Tucson?
Well, it was hot earlier this week, but today it actually cooled down to a balmy 96 degrees.
There you go. Whoa. What do you do there?
I'm a doctoral student at the University of Arizona studying orchestral conducting.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is there much of a job market for orchestra conductors these days?
It's a very small job market, yes.
But you're the best.
There you go.
Indeed.
Well, David, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is David's topic?
I'm filing for workers' comp.
Some jobs are renowned for being dangerous. Firefighting, coal mining, hosting public radio shows.
Ow!
But what about jobs we always assumed were safe? Our panelists are going to read you three stories about jobs with unexpected risks. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes, indeed.
All right, here we go. First, let's hear from Ms. Jessie Klein.
Usually, the most dangerous thing that can happen to a Hollywood screenwriter is a bad review or an embarrassing up-trousers photo as they climb out of a cab. But Aaron Sorkin isn't your average scribe. Sorkin, who is currently developing a show about a cable news network for HBO, recently showed up to a pre-Emmy party in West Hollywood with a broken nose. When asked how it happened, Sorkin sheepishly confessed, "I wish I could say I was in a bar fight, but I broke my nose writing." Sorkin, who is famous for doing lots of other things with his nose while writing, said he was trying to work out some lines of dialogue in the mirror when he accidentally headbutted himself. It's difficult to imagine exactly how this could have happened until one remembers that one of Sorkin's stylistic trademarks, often seen on his show The West Wing, is the long walk and talk. So it's possible that he started talking into the mirror from 30 feet away and then got so engaged in urgent, witty banter with himself that he forgot to look up until he smashed into it. Sorkin wrote the screenplay for last year's critically acclaimed Social Network. No word on what body part he injured while writing that project, but seeing as it garnered him an Oscar, it was probably worth it.
All right. Hollywood screenwriter Aaron Sorkin breaks his nose in the throes of creative fervor. Your next story of an occupational hazard we did not know about comes from Brian Babylon.
When Shira LaBelle gives tours at the Tillamook Cheese Factory in Tillamook, Oregon, as she's done for 5 years, she's 50 feet away from any of the machines, safe behind railings and thick safety glass, and the curious cheese fans. But nothing can save her from the power of her imagination. She says, quote, "I'd stare at the guy stirring the cheese curds in the open vats and start to obsess. What would happen if I fell in one? People cheese, that's what. Can you imagine what would happen if he went into that cheese presser? I do." Her hallucination levels of imagination of what could happen but never has in the whole history of the factory became debilitating. She soldiered on. She wrapped both her arms in thick bandages after sleepless nights imagining a cheddar loaf wrapping machine gone berserk. But eventually she had to file workman's comp. "I'm not even sure people should be allowed to see how cheese is made," she said recently. "I mean, it's not sausage, but often it's served with sausage, and for me, that's bad enough."
A tour guide at a cheese factory can't deal with her imagination looking at the machines. Your last story of a workplace danger comes from Paula Poundstone.
Mike Quirk of Jackson, New Hampshire, relished his job at Storyville, an amusement park full of Mother Goose themes and toddler-friendly rides. Mike, who happens to be short, at 5'4" tall, kept himself stout, just over 200 pounds, in order to parade around the park as the beloved teapot, a park favorite for years. However, on July 22nd, following the 2 o'clock performance at the Dizzy Diner, just after pointing out his handle and spout to a packed house of screaming fans, just before the script called for being tipped over and poured out, Mike tipped over with a massive heart attack. The next time he gets all steamed up, he might be shouting his last words, claims Mike's doctor, Dr. Julian Ramus, who insists he lose the weight the familiar character requires. Mike, however, is undeterred. He plans on returning to his job as soon as he can. I'm not nimble or quick enough to be Jack, and I don't want to get burned, he says. And then quotes Helen Keller, saying life is either a daring adventure or nothing. It is uncertain, however, if that is what she meant.
All right. Here are your choices. From Jesse Klein, the story of how a Hollywood screenwriter broke his nose, Hollywood screenwriting. From Brian Babylon, how a tour guide at a cheese factory became debilitated just by looking at the machines. Or from Paula Poundstone, how the teapot at Storyland got in trouble for being so short and stout. Which of these is the real story of an unexpected workplace hazard?
Wow, that's tough. They're all equally strange, aren't they? You know, I'm a big fan of Paula's, but I think today she's trying to bluff. So I think out of all of them, I would probably say Jesse's.
You're going to go with Jesse's story about the screenwriter Aaron Sorkin?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we spoke to somebody very familiar with the details of this story.
Aaron Sorkin told me that he was standing in front of a mirror reciting a block of dialogue where he accidentally headbutted himself and broke his own nose.
That was Matt Donnelly, the L.A. Times, to whom Aaron Sorkin told the story of his screenwriting injury. Congratulations, you got it right. There's not a lot of surprise. You earned the point. For Jesse Klein, you have won our prize. Carol Caster will record the greeting in your home voicemail. Well done.
Great, thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too.
Sir, I'm glad, I'm real glad to see you, but I'd better go and tend to this nose. It's bleeding profusely and it hurts like hell. I can't believe that I broke my nose. I can't believe that I broke my nose. I got a broken nose.
And now the game where we invite on giants of their fields to answer tiny little questions. In her 20s, our guest today left her native England to live among chimpanzees in the African jungle. Some thought it was crazy. We think it's crazy she ever came back to live with us humans. Her presentation, Jane Goodall Live, will be broadcast to movie theaters all around the country on September 27th, but she joins us now. Jane Goodall, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So we're very honored to have you with us. We know that these days, instead of living with the chimpanzees, you travel around the world speaking to audiences about chimpanzees and the need to preserve them. And we understand that you often greet audiences in chimpanzee language.
I do.
Can you do that for us now?
Absolutely. Hello.
Wow. You're about it. But can you tell me what that means in chimpanzee?
Well, it means hello. It's called Tantoot, the distance greeting. You would hear it if you came with me to Gombe and climbed up the mountains and listened in the morning. And if you're lucky, you hear a chimpanzee greeting the day and basically saying, this is me. Who's out there? Who are you? And hello.
When you do it, I'm assuming you've done it with the chimpanzees, how do they look at you funny? Like, who is that very strange-looking chimpanzee?
I don't do it in the wild because we don't interact with them that way. But I sometimes do it, you know, with a captive group. And, of course, in each group, they have their own particular dialect. And I think when I greet the captive group this way, they're not quite sure what to make of it and who's talking and who is she.
Right. So one of the things that I did not know, I mean, I knew that you were a world-renowned primatologist, but I did not know that you began so early. You went to Africa to be with the chimpanzees at a very young age.
Well, I saved up and got to Africa. I mean, I had to save up. We didn't have any money. And I got there when I was 23 with no degree or anything. and was fortunate enough to meet Louis Leakey, the famous anthropologist, and he offered me this opportunity to study chimpanzees. And I began in the field when I was 26.
How did you conceive that desire to go? I know a fair number of young women, but very few of them say that their real dream is to go to Africa and live with chimpanzees.
Well, it started when I was a tiny child. And, you know, then I found the books about Dr. Doolittle, who could speak animal language. And then when I was 11, I read the book about Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, Tarzan of the Jungle. And, of course, I fell passionately in love with this glorious being. And what did he do? He married that other stupid wimpy Jane.
You were jealous.
I was very jealous.
Now, you've observed so much about chimpanzees, and you've advanced our understanding so much. We were wondering if you or the chimpanzees through you have anything to teach us. For example, as you know, or maybe you don't know because you travel so much, here in America, the political situation has reached a complete impasse. So the question is, how do chimpanzees resolve disputes between groups, if they have a way?
Well, chimpanzees are very aggressively territorial.
Yes.
And if they see one or two individuals from a neighboring social group, they are liable to attack them very seriously. So like us, they have a dark side to
really?
Their nature.
Do they ever accuse each other of being socialists?
They might if they could speak. But actually,
do they ever send naked pictures of themselves to their constituents on Twitter?
That would
insider.
Be an interesting development.
It would be.
They are nicely covered with hair.
That's true. You give them, it's really funny, like a chimpanzee sexed you. It's like, I can't tell, it's just brown. What is that?
I got another brown sex.
Exactly. So, I mean, but within bands of chimpanzees, do they have ways of like getting along? Are there
yeah,
social...
Yeah, actually, what's very impressive with chimpanzees, you know, a community's about about 50 individuals, and they all know each other, and they get along. They may have squabbles, but they're not very terrible. And if there is a squabble, if there is a conflict, what's very fascinating to watch is that this creates tension in the group, and that tension is not really resolved until the victim of the conflict approaches the aggressor submissively. The aggressor will reach out and pat, embrace, or kiss. The victim then becomes calm and social harmony is restored. And it reminds me of my grandmother. You know, when I was growing up, she would always say, before you go to sleep, you must say sorry if there's been some kind of quarrel. Let
right.
not the sun set on your anger.
Jane, I'm curious. I made the mistake and got caught up in a Hollywood movie called Planet of the Apes. And it's like terrifying. Could that ever happen?
Well... So you're thinking about putting scientists into small cages and doing research on them. I wish it could happen sometime.
No, I see. Return the tables on them.
Yeah.
We understand that one of my favorite stories that we came across about you was about a Gary Larson cartoon some years ago.
Oh, yes, that was a lovely one.
Can you describe it?
Yes, it's two chimpanzees, and the female is grooming the male, and he's got his back to her, and she's holding up a hare. And she's saying, ah, another blonde hair, doing some more research, in quotes, with that Jane Goodall tramp.
We were told that your foundation saw it and was very angry with Mr. Larson, but you were not.
Well, I mean, this stupid woman who was the executive director at the time wrote and said, this implies that Jane Goodall has sexual relationships with a chimpanzee. I mean, honestly. That's an idea. No, I thought it was very funny, and I think if you make a Gary Larson cartoon, boy, you've made it.
That's true. It's absolutely true. Well, Jane Goodall, we are delighted and, in fact, honored to talk with you today, but we have also asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
He's come so far since Valley Girl.
You study the lives and culture of the wild chimpanzee, but we thought we'd ask you about a creature that's truly wild. We're going to ask you three questions about the doings of actor Nicolas Cage. If you get two right, you'll win our prize. for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is renowned biologist Jane Goodall playing for?
Dr. Jane is playing for Candy Thompson of Augusta, Kansas.
All right, you ready to try this?
Okay.
Here we go. Mr. Cage, Nicolas Cage, says that once his own home was invaded by whom? A, the San Marino, California Con Air fan club. B, a very drunk Cher. Or C, an otherwise naked man wearing a leather jacket and eating a fudgesicle.
Well, I'm going to take the second one, whatever it was you said.
I said the actress and singer Cher.
Yeah, that's my choice.
Cher broke in. No, actually, although that, I guess, could happen, depending on the kind of day Cher had had, it was actually C, the mostly naked fudgesicle man.
Well, I just didn't like thinking about
no,
that.
No, neither did I. And neither did Mr. Cage. In fact, he disliked the experience so much that after he talked the man out of the house, he then moved. He says, all right, you have two more chances. There was speculation in the news just this week that actor Nicolas Cage is secretly what? A, an undead vampire. B, a woman, or C, a really good actor?
Well, I'm going to pump for a really good actor because I'm getting a bit sorry for this Nicolas Cage.
Really?
We all are.
I'm going to say, personally, I think Nicolas Cage really is a good actor, so I don't think speculation that he would be a good actor would be in the news, personally.
Really?
I love National Treasure.
There you are. So anyway, back to you, Dr. Jane. Are you going to stick with that choice, or are you going to think about
it? No, I'm sticking with it.
You're sticking
all
with
right.
it?
All right. Yep.
I have a feeling that I could not talk you out of this even if I tried, so I'll say no. I'm afraid it was undead vampire was the speculation.
Okay, because, all right. I knew it was going to be wrong, but I just thought I'd give him a plug.
I appreciate that. He appreciates that.
Yeah.
What happened was a Civil War era photo came to light showing a soldier from the Civil War who looks an awful lot like Nicolas Cage, and the guy who was trying to sell the picture on eBay insists that the only explanation for this is that Cage is an undead vampire who never ages.
That is hilarious.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
All right, you have one more question. Let's see if we can get this one. Cage got in some financial trouble recently, mainly because he spent a lot of money rather than sending it to the IRS, as he was supposed to. Among his extravagant purchases was what? A, a dirigible. B, a solid platinum golf putter. Or C, a Tyrannosaurus skull.
Oh, well, if I was Nicolas Cage, I'd definitely want the Tyrannosaurus skull. So.
You and he are of a like mind, because that was the answer, yes. Cage paid almost $300,000 for the skull. He beat out actor Leonardo DiCaprio at the auction. Cage also bought a castle in Germany, an estate in Newport, Rhode Island, and an entire island in the Bahamas.
Wow. Well, maybe after I've, pumped for him as a really good actor, he'll make a donation to the Jane
Goodall. You know, after the war, you stood up for him, I have no doubt. If you're listening, Nick Cage, or you know Nick Cage, get the word to him that Jane Goodall stood up for him. Carl, how did Jane Goodall do in our show?
Well, she had one correct answer, Peter, but she needed two to win for Candy Thompson.
Ah, well.
I'm sorry for poor Candy. I apologize.
Jane Goodall is appearing in movie theaters across the country in Jane Goodall Live on September 27th. We encourage you to find out about that and go. Jane Goodall, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for your work, and thank you so much for being here on WaitWait.com. Bye-bye. In just a minute, Carl gets Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity in our listener limerick challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
I'm Lisa Mullins. PRI's The World takes you inside news wherever it's happening. You hear reports from our network of BBC correspondents around the globe. You meet people who are affected by the day's events. And we examine culture and controversy brewing overseas. Bring a global perspective to your day on The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, more in our series from Jerusalem to both address and transcend a new moment of Middle Eastern tumult. Rabbi and philosopher David Hartman opens a window onto the inner life of the Jewish state, struggles and searching that shape news from this part of the world, but are rarely heard in and for themselves. Please join me. That's from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
Support for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WPLN comes from Oak Hill School, a co-educational pre-kindergarten through sixth grade school dedicated to building character and integrity in a Christian environment. Details at oakhill.org. And by Nashville Public Radio Producers Circle, the generous financial support of Producers Circle members helps fund locally produced programming, including our award-winning local news reporting and Capitol Hill Conversations. The time is 11:40, 72 degrees in Nashville.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Jesse Klein. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl is almost hit by a bus-sized rhyme falling from space in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, time for a game we're calling...
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
As you know, the great band R.E.M. announced they were breaking up this week, prompting many people to realize that they were still together. In honor of their decades of great... music, we're going to quiz you about REM lyrics. We'll give you the first line and three choices for what then followed. Complete it correctly, you'll get a point. Ready, Jess? Here you go. Finish this line from the song The Wake Up Bomb. My head's on fire and high esteem. A. I sort of look like Ben Vereen. B. Get drunk and sing along to Queen. C. Get your stains out with OxyClean.
REM would never sell out to OxyClean. Let's go with the second one.
You're right, Jesse. Very
good. Thank God.
Brian, your turn. Here's one from the hit Stand. Finish this. Your feet are going to be on the ground. A, you could stand to lose a few pounds. B, we thought you were a girl on your ultrasound. Or C, your head is there to move you around.
What was the first part of that part?
It was, your feet are going to be on the ground.
Your feet are going to be on the ground.
Yeah, you got it.
And then what was C?
Your head is there to move you around.
You are
REM. Oh, wow.
Yep. I'm going to go see.
You mean it? Yes, you're right. Wait a minute. Do you mean to tell there's a crossover between NPR fans and REM fans? I never would have imagined that. All right. Your turn, Paula, from the song Man on the Moon. Which of these follows the line, Moses went walking with the staff of wood? A, oh wait, that was Roosevelt, I misunderstood. B, Newton got beaned by the apple, good. C, what's a hooded sweatshirt without a hood?
B?
Yes, Newton got beaned by the apple, good. Very good. That does it for our tribute to REM. We look forward to the day soon when they get old and go on their big reunion tour. It'll be called Everybody's Hip Hurts Sometimes Tour. All right, panel, time to answer some more questions about this week's news. Jesse, Beyonce has one, Britney Spears has one, Justin Bieber has one, and no, I do not mean a uterus. As of this week, the U.S. Marine Corps has one, too. What do they now all have in common?
Beyonce, Britney, Bieber, and the Marine Corps?
Mm-hmm. Also, Michael Jordan had one for a while. Elizabeth Taylor had one. Trump has one.
Toupee. Bad no. attitude. Why? I honestly thought I knew the news when I came in here. But I guess this wouldn't be the news.
Technically not.
Oh, a fragrance.
It's a fragrance, yes.
The Marine Corps has one?
The Marine Corps has an official eau de cologne. So do you love the smell of napalm in the morning? No?
Yes.
No? Well, then how about the new U.S. Marine Cologne? It's a, quote, finely crafted fusion of sandalwood, cedar, and citric spices, unquote. You can also get U.S. Army perfume, but don't wear them both at the same time. Your pulse points will get into a bar fight.
Did my tax dollars pay for this?
No, this is a part of a branding effort that the armed services are getting into to sort of spread their and improve their brand recognition amongst the populace. These perfumes are attractive manly scents, but actual soldiers...
What is it, a manly scent? What is an attractive manly scent? I'm
curious
about
that. You know, it's like musky. Smelly.
Gunpowdery.
Gunpowdery. Yeah. You don't want to wear them in combat because you don't want to be sneaking up on, say, the Taliban and all of a sudden have the other enemy fighters go,
like, wait. What is that? It smells like handsome men around here.
Yeah, exactly.
The enemy goes from being furious to aroused.
Yeah. Brian, male deep-sea squids can't see in the dark and therefore they have trouble finding a mate. Luckily, according to a recent discovery by marine biologists working off the coast of California, those squid have worked out a solution. What is it?
Like secretion.
Well, it's more sort of their lifestyle choice. You could think of it as.
Oh, they're gay?
They're sort of, I'll give it to you, they're sort of omnisexual. They mate with everything.
Like, whatever. Hey, whatever, what is this? What is this, a coral reef? Whatever.
What is that? Is that a tire? You're looking
whatever.
Very fetching today.
Hey, get over here, you.
In the deep sea where deep sea squids live, it's pitch black, and female deep sea squids look exactly like male deep sea squids. That's a problem. For the boys, but rather than give up and live alone with a bunch of deep-sea cats, the male squids have a solution. They mate with any deep-sea squid that swims by, regardless of gender, age, or Facebook relationship status. Of course, if you go on Facebook to check the squid status, it's like not complicated at all. I just hump everything.
Matester.
Matester. Yep.
I like it.
Matester.
I like it.
Yep.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always click the Contact Us link on our website at waitwait.npr.org. You can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium or our show in Indianapolis on October 27th. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mary Ann from Salisbury, North Carolina.
Now, Salisbury, I don't know where that is. Where exactly is that?
Oh, it's a lovely small southern town.
Yes?
Settled between Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and Charlotte, North Carolina, on I-85.
Okay.
You should come down and see us.
I will, absolutely.
We'll leave the light on.
Don't move. I'll be right there.
Thanks.
Well, welcome to the show, Mary Ann. Carl Castle, also a son of North Carolina.
Right? I know.
Is going to...
Somebody.
That was
Tar
very
Heel.
Sultry.
Yes.
we Tar Heels stick together.
I bet you do. Mary Ann, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and to the limericks, you will be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
Our IHOP's a hipness announcer. Velvet ropes are the confidence trouncer. We're in the East Village, so fear a great pillage. We've hired a big, scary...
bouncer.
Yes, a bouncer. Very good. The bouncer outside the new IHOP in New York City's East Village may make it look like a hot new club, but no, it's just an IHOP. The idea is he's going to stand guard all night to keep drunk partiers in check and only let in those who fit that distinct international IHOP look. Like, I'm sorry, sir, but unless you look like you're about to vomit on yourself, I can't let you in.
I used to work at an IHOP, you know.
Did you really?
Yeah. And I rescued a man from drowning in his over-easies.
His eggs?
Yep.
How did he come to be drowning in his own eggs?
We passed out.
Well, apparently, Paula, the idea here is that IHOPs are open late and or early, depending, and the idea is a lot of drunk people show up at IHOPs.
Yes, they do.
And they want a bouncer to keep things from getting rowdy.
I didn't have that luxury.
Because after 15 mojitos, the one thing you want is a pint of boysenberry syrup. Let's go.
But the thing is, it kind of is what you want. That's what IHOP knows.
All right, very good. Here Here is your next limerick.
The hurricane rains have been dumpkins on the fields where the gourds have been plumpkins. So this Halloween, few carved lanterns will gleam, because there is a shortage of...
pumpkins.
Yes, farmers blame the great pumpkin shortage of 2011 on Hurricane Irene, when really it's the thousands suffering from devastating pumpkin spice latte addiction. In any event, don't worry, our government is stepping up. House Leader John Boehner has heroically agreed to step in as our national jack-o'-lantern.
I'm glad you said that, because I know this is risky, but at that president's speech, the last one, it was the vice president, Barack Obama, and that other black guy who was sitting behind. Who is that guy? Who's that other black guy back there? It was John Boehner.
There you are.
It's weird.
Here is your last limerick.
A pop song is far from comp lit. Just stick in a prurient bit. Improve the chart rating with words about mating. Yes, sex is what makes a big
hit.
Yes, according to a study published in the journal Evolutionary Biology, the key to making a hit pop song is to fill it with sex, or as they put it, reproductive messages. Thank you, Journal of Evolutionary Biology, for pointing that out. It is true, though. You look back through the greatest hits of all time, and it's filled with songs like the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction, or the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Boobs. I'm waiting for the first, like, successful pop group to actually use the words reproductive message in a song.
I want a reproductive message.
Yeah.
It could have been R.E.M.
We don't know. They tend to mumble.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Marianne do in our quiz?
Well, Marianne, you had 3 correct answers, so yay. I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done. It's time for our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Carl Castle, can you give us the current scores?
Well, Jessie Klein has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points, but Paula Poundstone and Brian Babylon are tied for second. Each has 3.
Okay. All right. Well, we flipped a coin, and Paul's elected to go second, so Brian, you're up first. The clock
All right.
will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. 2 American hikers were reunited with their families after being freed from prison in blank.
Iran.
Right. EU officials said this week that they will not abandon blank or allow it to default on its debts.
Greece.
Right. American diplomats walked out during an anti-American speech. Iranian President Ahmadinejad gave it the blank.
UN.
Right. On Wednesday, a House of Representatives panel approved a bill that would stop delivery of mail on blank.
Saturday.
Right. British singer Sean Ryder says his recently released autobiography was hard to write because blank.
It was fake.
No, he can't remember anything that happened between 1990 and 2006. After 40 years on the air, the soap opera Blank ended on Friday.
All My Children.
Right. Heinz announced this week that it's doing away with the traditional style of blank packets.
Ketchup.
Right. On Saturday, an intoxicated Oregon man was detained after he blanked.
Fell asleep in a cop car.
No, after he mistook a police station for a casino.
So
he walked
close.
In, asked a cop for blackjack chips. The policeman told him, this is a police station, not a casino, and he left. But a few minutes later, he staggered back in, once again, under the impression the police station was a casino. He was then given the most redundant alcohol test ever. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Now, Brian had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Brian has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. Here we go, Paula. Fill in the blank. Early this week, the Pentagon officially repealed the controversial blank policy.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right. Former Afghan President Rabbani was killed this week in what is thought to be an attack by the blank.
Taliban.
Right. A battle this week over a spending bill with disaster relief has led to the possibility of another government blank.
Shutdown.
Right. Modern Family and Mad Men were about the big winners at this year's blank awards.
Emmy.
Right. Georgia police are close to identifying the suspects who allegedly broke into a man's home and blanked.
Broke into a man's home and danced all night.
And threw a birthday party and washed their dog. Over 27 million people tuned in to watch Ashton Kutcher's debut in the sitcom Blank.
Two and a half men.
Right. 2 Italian men arrested for soliciting prostitutes while visiting Croatia told the judge that they were just blank.
They thought it was okay because the Italian prime minister does it all the time.
Exactly right. They said they were following the example set by Silvio Berlusconi. Quote, what's wrong with it? That's what our prime minister Silvio Berlusconi does, the Italians explained to the judge. Immediately freed, the two men went on to get hair plugs and to destroy the economy of a major European nation. Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz? Pretty well, it seemed.
Yes, Paula had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She is now tied with Brian Babylon with 15, and they're both in the lead.
All right.
Oh, man.
So how many, then, does Jesse need to win and claim her first victory? And wait, don't tell me.
6 correct answers.
Oh,
all right, here we go,
Jesse. All right.
This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, Ben Bernanke announced Operation Twist, the latest plan designed to stimulate the blank.
The economy.
Right. Officials are investigating after planes crashed at 2 different blanks in Nevada and West Virginia.
Airfields.
Right, air shows. At the F8 Developers Conference on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg announced major changes to blank.
Facebook.
Right. This week, the Justice Department charged operators of an online blank game site with running a Ponzi scheme.
Poker.
Yes. According to research published this week at fastcompany.com, the average apple you see in the grocery store is actually blank.
Frozen.
No.
Old.
Yes, old is right.
Well, old.
Ew.
I said old.
She said frozen first, though. I don't know.
Frozen's the same as old. Go.
We give it to her. She changed her mind.
All right. Bill Clinton revealed this week that he had turned down an offer to appear in the TV show blank.
Fantasy Island.
Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, that's terrible.
On Thursday, HP announced that their new CEO would be former eBay CEO blank.
Ugh, I don't know.
Meg Whitman. A Yankees fan got to live out a lifelong dream when he went to a Red Sox game and blanked.
Threw out the first pitch.
No, served the pitcher with a summons.
Oh, obviously.
When the guy showed up at Fenway with court papers, the Red Sox tried to stop him, saying the pitcher had to pitch that very evening. But the gleeful Yankees fan said, quote, my client wants it served today. That's what I got to do. That's true. He did not have to be wearing a Yankee jersey and laughing maniacally the whole time. Carl, did Jesse do well enough to win?
She needed 6 correct answers, but she had just 5 correct answers.
Oh.
So with 15 points, Paula Poundstone and Brian Babylon are this week's co-champions.
There you are.
Oh, man.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists after Netflix what will be the next apology we get from a big corporation. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a program in which rates are determined by the driving habits of policyholders. Learn more at progressive.com. The William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. And Lumber Liquidators, providing hardwood flooring for the home handyman and professionals. Catalogs are available at 1-800-HARDWOOD. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod. Our brand new intern this week is Hannah Withers. Welcome, Hannah. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Liederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next apology we hear from an American company? Paula Poundstone.
The head honcho of Reese's Pieces will have to make a tearful apology to those who thought the peanuts they used were defatted when, in fact, they're only partially defatted and have sent many to the bank with huge deposits.
Brian Babylon.
The president of Hair Club for Men will come clean that he is not a client.
And Jesse Klein.
Well, I don't know if Domino's will apologize, but they should apologize for releasing their infamous Oreo pizza, which I fell for and ordered, and it did not contain the joy of either a pizza or an Oreo.
And if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paula Poundstone, Brian Babylon, and Jesse Klein. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.
And this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
On the next Fresh Air, how one State Department employee spent time rebuilding Iraq.
We had money everywhere. It was literally in boxes that you had to step over. At one point in time, I had $100,000 in cash in a small safe in my office. I felt like a drug dealer.
Peter Van Buren's new book is We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Nashville weather for this afternoon, a slight chance of showers, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 o'clock with mostly cloudy skies. And